powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
This is Jake and Stacy on 710 ESPN Seattle. Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Jake Heaps and Stacy Ross.
This hour of Jake and Stacy brought to you by Advanced Hair Restoration. New Baseball America rankings, Julio Rodriguez, number two. Amazing news. Shannon Dreyer, 710 ESPN Seattle. Mariners Insider is going to join us at noon. We're going to talk a bit more about those rankings.
Should be number one. East Coast bias already coming through.
Classic East Coast bias.
Enough.
It's unbelievable.
Enough.
What are we?
Okay.
South Alaska?
Okay. Shannon's going to be joining us. I only assume that Jake and Curtis will sound off by asking her why Julio isn't number one. We've got some other questions for her, though. So
why isn't he already in the Hall of Fame?
Okay, that's
right.
Enough,
you're darn
enough.
Skippy, we're going to ask Shannon Dreyer that.
That's coming up at noon. Before we get to that, though, we do have some updates on where the Seahawks search for a new defensive coordinator stands. You've got some candidates that have been linked. Obviously, we knew Ed Donatell, who's the defensive coordinator for the Broncos. He had been linked to Seattle, and as well as current defensive line coach Clint Hurt. Both of those guys were named as candidates in the original report from the Seattle Times. And then you also have from, was this originally from Michael Sean Dugar of The Athletic? He was the first one I saw with this. And Michael Sean mentions another name that could be linked. Am I saying this right? Sean Desai?
Yes.
Yeah, you are.
Sean Desai, another person who's linked. He is currently with the Bears, which is also now technically a like maybe a third person with some kind of link to the Chicago Bears that's also been linked to Seattle. So we'll see what happens with that report about Sean Desai, but I think the two names we're watching very closely, Clint Hurt and Ed Donatell. So, Jake, that's the latest. There's also this really interesting tweet from Adam Jude of the Seattle Times. We're going to dive into that a little bit more at 10:30. Adam Jude, who was the other reporter in addition to Bob Condotta, who had that report about the Seahawks parting ways with Ken Norton Jr., he says in a tweet, kind of an extra tweet, that they want to be more attack-minded. So maybe not a full philosophical shift defensively, but they want to be more attack-minded. What's that mean, right? What does that mean? We're going to talk about that at 10:30, what we think that means. Before we get to any of it, though, Jake, I got to be really honest with you. You know, it's they always say, like, in sports radio, one of the worst things you could say is, like, I don't care or I don't have an opinion about it. It's like a cardinal sin. It's not that I don't not have an opinion about it. But I go back to what Danny Kelly said when he was on with us the other day. And I think that that's just kind of like where I stand with it. I mean, we had Danny Kelly of The Ringer on, and we asked him, like, hey, what do you make of all these moves and what you think might happen? And you know, like, what was your initial reaction to this happening? And Danny Kelly said, you know, it's got to be really honest. Like, it didn't initially hit him too hard.
If I'm being totally honest, I'm sort of just like, I don't really care. It's one of those things where it just didn't really make a big, it didn't make a big like dent in me in terms of like what it means for the future for the team. Like, I've always felt this way. It's like, this is Pete Carroll's defense. It's sort of like a figurehead position to be the defensive coordinator. I think there has to be some things, obviously, that the coordinator's doing. I think he's calling plays, so like play calling and knowing the right situations, making it like adapting to things. All that stuff is very important. But I also was just like, I don't know. It didn't really, I don't know how big of a difference it's going to make in terms of like what defense they run. So that's just kind of where I was.
Now, Danny's not wrong, Jake, because it's not going to make a difference in terms of what defense they run. Pete Carroll, in my opinion, is not going to bring in some random dude that he doesn't know and hasn't worked with before that's used to be a head coach overseeing some kind of defense. He's not going to bring him in and give him the keys to the defense. The defense is Pete Carroll's baby. It's precious to him. But also, here's why I think it doesn't especially, you know, matter in a substantial way in terms of change that you're going to see just because of a new defensive coordinator. Because I think that personnel is almost going to impact that more than the scheme. Like, when it comes to this defense and when it comes to where Seattle is right now, Jake, mm-hmm. personnel is more important than the scheme. You think about back when Pete Carroll's defense was at its very, very best. We just talked about this, that like basic cover three zone defense. They had some of the best players in football. Like, that's part of what made it go and part of what made it work. It wasn't this, like, super, super innovative thing. They just had great personnel. I feel like when you look at Pete Carroll's defense, the defense itself, like, yeah, maybe sometimes you'd like to see it be more aggressive, and I know that some people don't love, like, you know, that they play kind of like a soft coverage you know, like, that they don't like how not aggressive they are as early in games.
Mm-hmm.
That said, the biggest problem isn't, to me, the scheme. It's that you don't have the pieces you used to.
Well, I would agree with you that when you're talking about personnel, that to me is number one in this conversation when it comes to defense, defensive performance and getting better and all of that. But I do believe that your scheme allows you and gives you the ability to be able to put your guys in the best position, ultimately, to maximize guys' strengths. And I think that has been the biggest disconnect that we have witnessed over the past four seasons under Ken Norton Jr. And so I want to go to cut number two here with Mark Schlereth, Stacey. And, you know, what Schlereth was talking about is the role. What is your job as a defensive coordinator, you know, from a 10,000-foot view?
How do we maximize our players' potential? And then, two, how do we minimize or mitigate our weaknesses? And those are the kind of two perspectives that I always look at. And, you know, your former defensive coordinator, Dan Quinn, it was interesting talking to him just a couple of weeks ago when he was talking about, hey, one of the things we've done is we've taken that kind of Seattle cover three defense, that match cover three, and we've really run a lot more man-to-man, but we have zoned the middle routes. Like, we've zoned off the shallow crosses. We've zoned off a bunch of, because that's where we're getting hurt.
So you look at that part of it, and Schlereth, you know, really dissecting, hey, here's what a defensive coordinator does. They try to maximize the strength of their players. They look at their star players and what they do best and say, all right, here's what we're going to be great at. Here's what we're going to do in order to put everybody in the best position so that we can put together the best defense and really understand your weak points and how do you mitigate that. Okay, that's number one. Number two, which is to me the thing that it has been the main reason why it was time to move on from Ken Norton Jr., is that the other thing that you have to do is you have to make sure that everyone is on the same page. And Ken Norton Jr., I believe, is a fantastic linebackers coach. I question Ken Norton Jr. as the defensive coordinator in terms of, you know, being able to communicate, convey the message, convey what guys are supposed to do, help guys get on the same page, set that standard in terms of what they're asking for, what they're looking like, or looking, you know, what it's supposed to look like. And that's why I think getting a new voice, a new fresh set of eyes would be very important. And that's why I would love to see, you know, somebody from the outside come in. I know Clint Hurt has been the name that has been thrown around quite a bit from an internal hire. But what I do end up seeing here, Stacey, is a possible co-defensive coordinator situation where you kind of have the best of both worlds, where you truly value, and I truly believe this, Pete Carroll truly values Clint Hurt, the job that he has done since he's arrived here in Seattle, and, you know, recognizing that he's ready to take that next step and to be a defensive coordinator. However, it would be your first year as a defensive coordinator in the NFL, just in, you know, your coordinator experience at all. And I don't think he wants to go through that again defensively like he did offensively with Shane Waldron. So what's the best situation? Meld those things together with somebody like Ed Donatell, who has been extremely experienced, has a tremendous background, not only coaching defense, but coaching secondaries in particular, which is important information knowing that they fired Andre Curtis, who was their pass game coordinator. So maybe you have co-defensive coordinators, you know, moving forward here with Clint Hurt, you know, running the run game coordinator and Donatell running the pass game coordinator. And that way you do have experience. You have some fresh eyes. These guys both work together under Vic Fangio's staff. And it would make a lot of sense to me in order to be able to get new eyes, get new voices in the building and be able to still have that working relationship that ultimately Pete Carroll covets.
I guess what I'm wondering is, like, would Ed Donatell, he's the defensive coordinator for the Denver Broncos. I know if the Broncos bring in someone else that's like, I actually don't want you here, like, maybe he's, obviously not every option might be on his table. Like, being the defensive coordinator for the Broncos in 2022 might not be necessarily secured and safe, like a safe bet for him. So I understand that, like, you know, it's not like this is the easiest decision in the world, but how interested would you be then in going from I'm defensive coordinator to the Broncos to being with Seattle as co-DC or like a pass game coordinator? Like, I don't know how enticing that would be, having less control with a new place.
Well, I'm assuming that he's going to be out. Where whoever's coming in, I'm assuming that Ed Donatell is going to be out. And maybe I'm wrong in assuming so.
I don't think
maybe
you're wrong whoever... in assuming so. I think most new coaches would bring in, you know, a new defensive coordinator. I say that knowing Pete Carroll started with not a new defensive coordinator, but... I don't think you're wrong. I just wonder if that is something to consider. Like, could Ed Donatell find a job as a defensive coordinator with one of the many other coaching staffs that are hiring?
He could, but I don't think it's a slam dunk situation. But I do believe that when you're looking at trying to meld everything together, and that's why, you know, Sean Desai is also a unique one. Clearly, Pete Carroll values the Vic Fangio tree because all three of these names, Clint Hurt, Ed Donatell, and Sean Desai, have all come from this Vic Fangio defensive-minded tree here. And that, to me, is why I think he's incredibly intrigued in potentially trying to work all of that out and put it all together. And you know, that is why, Stacey, when you talk about the changes, I'm not sure how much change we will see schematically from what we have normally seen from Pete Carroll. We've got to wait and see how that shakes out. But what I do think is that it is important to get new eyes. It is important to get a new voice. It is important to get new evaluation on the strengths of your players and how to best maximize them. And you're right, personnel is a huge aspect of being a great defense and getting better. And that's why, you know, I think that this offseason free agency, the draft, it's so critical for them to be able to turn this thing around. But it is something where this was a necessary move. Now they have to. Now Pete Carroll has to make sure he's making the right move, making the right steps forward,
sure,
and finding the next guy to come in here, convey the message, be able to get guys on the same page, be able to, you know, manage games better than what they did over the last four seasons.
Again, maybe I'm wrong. I don't see a world that exists where there's anyone Pete Carroll doesn't know. And if Donatell comes in, who he does know and who he's known for many, many years, you know, and you have that co-DC situation, fine. But, like, I cannot I almost don't even want to overlook that idea of, like, yeah, personnel matters. Personnel is, like, the most important thing. Like, personnel is it. That's how you make the difference. If you want to talk about how this defense takes a step forward, well, yeah, it's going to be having even better weapons to work with. The best defensive coordinator in the world, like, could he make this defense as it existed a top overall defense? I don't know. I mean,
I certainly think it could have been coached
so
better.
I agree
with that.
There was absolutely room for improvement. I mean, you looked at the beginning of this year when it looked at times like guys, like, didn't know what they were doing. There were communication issues. Like, a lot of that is, like, coaching stuff. It's not just, oh, we didn't have the fastest, strongest guy available, or we didn't have a guy that was getting a ton of sacks. But also, the things that you do in the draft, the things that you do in free agency, to me, are just as important as who's your next defensive coordinator. Because ultimately, your defensive coordinator is Pete Carroll. It's Pete Carroll's defense. If I were a betting man, I would say it's Clint Hurt. And I actually, you know, I'm like trying to poke holes in it, but I actually totally see validity with your point about being a co-DC, kind of wanting, you know, to have Donatell come in and the two of them to work together. Like, I can absolutely see that happening too, and it's a good point. But, like, it's all about, if you want to talk about where they improve, it's who do they draft and who do they sign in free agency. And then where do you go with guys like Daryl Taylor? How do they improve? How do they take a step forward?
Yeah.
That's what's going to make the difference, not deciding that you have the answers in your scheme.
Well, I don't disagree with that whatsoever. No matter what scheme, no matter who comes in, having the best personnel and upgrading your personnel is going to give you the best possible chance to put your best foot forward. But I do believe that getting an opportunity, and if Pete Carroll can embrace this, and we are going to talk about this going into the next segment, if he can embrace a new mindset or a shift in philosophy a little bit here, and bring in the coaching staff that has the expertise in doing so, I think that that would bring very, very positive results given the personnel that you currently have.
This hour of Jake and Stacey is brought to you by Advanced Hair Restoration. As a reminder, we're going to get back to that question. What's it mean to be more attack-minded on defense? What's it look like? In about 15 minutes right now, let's get to Headline Rewrites.
Extra, read all about it.
Headline Rewrites.
Presented by Tila Mortgage.
The real story behind the headlines in today's news with Jake and Stacey.
Headline number one, guys, I don't know if you know this, but it's prospect list season.
Let's go.
Get hype. Baseball America releasing their top 100 list today for 2022. The Mariners had five names on the list, led by Julio Rodriguez at number two overall. What is the real headline?
Now, Julio at number two is the exciting headline, and that's the headline we're going to talk about at noon. The real headline that I want you to take away from it, Emerson Hancock is no longer in the top 100. That's the real headline. It's the unsaid part of that headline. Last
year,
Baseball America had him at number 57, Jake.
They did. And how much of that is due to the injury that he sustained during the year at the minor league level? That's what I'm curious about. Are they knocking him down because of that injury? Or are they seeing something else that that would not be... It would be an even worse problem, which is your actual stuff, which is, you know, the overall upside that you have. I have to assume that this is more due to injury and that Emerson Hancock can find his way back very quickly into the top 100. I guess maybe that is what I'm hoping for more so than anything else. I guess I have the wishful thinking on that because Emerson Hancock is supposed to be something special and is supposed to be something that is going to be a lot of fun for Mariners fans to watch.
Yeah, Brandon Gustafson of 710sports.com, he tweeted out the rankings that the five Mariners who appear on the list have. Julio Rodriguez, number two. George Kirby, number 12, who we heard from Kyle Glazer of Baseball America last week. Very high on him. Noelvi Marte, 18th. He said he's still a couple years away from potentially reaching the bigs. And then Matt Brash at 45. And Brandon Williamson, the lefty, at number 83.
What if Noelvi Marte continues to be one of those guys that's constantly 3 years away from the bigs? Like,
sure hope
little
not.
Do you know, Noelvi Marte's 12.
Boy, he's young already, though.
He is already young. I know. It's going to be one of those things where next year it's like, how many years away? Like, it's there's so much intrigue, and he's the farthest. It's the Venn diagram of, like, most intrigue and farthest away. Right.
I think he's also the guy we know the least about because he's had such little experience in America playing. But boy, I mean, he only had last year was his first full season in the States. He's already at number 18. I mean, sky's
That's
the limit
insane.
For him.
Yeah, he's a baller.
Headline Rewrites.
Headline number two, the Seahawks have officially requested an interview with Ed Donatell and have also reportedly done the same with Bears defensive coordinator Sean Desai. What is the real headline?
Also reportedly throwing his name into the mix, an up-and-comer named Pete Carroll. Because I can't stress this enough, it's Pete Carroll's defense. It is still going to be Pete Carroll's defense, no matter who he brings in, which, by the way, I don't think he's bringing anyone in. I mean, maybe he brings in Ed Donatell, someone who he's known since his time with University of Pacific. Is that what it is? Pacific University?
Pacific.
Whatever. Back in the 80s when he was there, like 83
or something
like that.
They don't have a football program anymore.
Yeah. I'm not going to call out Pete Carroll's age. That's rude. But Pete... It was a long time ago.
Well, he's your peer. That's why you would.
That's
you
exactly
do
what
so.
It is. It's because calling out Pete meant calling out myself. I graduate of Pacific. It's Pete Carroll's defense. If I were to bet, it's going to be someone like Clint Hurt that gets promoted. And ultimately, though, this is what Pete is overseeing. Accountability falls to Pete. Responsibility falls to Pete. Those big decisions falls to Pete. And this is what's really fascinating and what I can't wait to see. If they get the right mix of personnel, if they get the right people in there, do you suddenly see Pete Carroll's defense take off again? Because back in 2013, it was a great defense. It's fantastic. There's nothing like horribly wrong to me, in my opinion, with the scheme itself. It's about getting the right pieces that fit it.
Yeah, there is that, but there's also been such a huge disconnect in the communication and the way the guys have understood what they've wanted to do. And also, guess what? You can say good job for being able to come up with solutions to problems in the year. And I think it's what they've done over the last two seasons, midway through to fix the problems and the issues and to finish strong defensively, I think have been, you know, really, really good efforts by Pete Carroll and his coaching staff. However, that should not be the standard. You should not have to wholesale change a lot of the things that you're doing in the middle of the year if you have a great defense, if you have a great defensive scheme, if you have everybody on the same page. And that, to me, is another reason why you're moving on from Ken Norton Jr. and trying to find new voices, trying to find voices that can get everybody on the same page no matter what your scheme is. And, you know, Stacey, maybe Pete Carroll's got a few tricks up his sleeve that you're not ready for, you know, going into 2022. I'm not going to rule that out when I see names like Ed Donatell and Sean Desai. And very clearly, there is a style of play that Pete Carroll is very intrigued by. And that is, you know, the Vic Fangio, you know, coaching tree here. Clint Hurt being one of those guys that also, before he came to Seattle, was with Chicago with Vic Fangio. So I think that there is a theme here, and I'm going to be very curious to see what that iteration looks like and how much Pete Carroll is willing to, you know, really embrace some of those defensive schemes and principles that were clear, you know, that are clear from, you know, Vic Fangio disciples, so to speak.
Headline rewrites.
Headline number three, Texans GM Nick Caserio says Deshaun Watson more than likely won't play for the Texans again. What is the real headline?
In related news, I also will not be playing for the Texans again. Because who on God's green earth thought Watson would suit up for the Texans again? This is a relationship that has been over for what, going on? We're approaching 2 years, a year and a half?
Yeah.
At least
from
when
the initial contract dispute started, then all of the legal stuff falling out from that. So certainly a year, but it feels like even longer.
Oh, man. I mean, this is something that I don't know how you bounce back from if you're Deshaun Watson and the organization. Maybe you bring in a head coach that, you know, Deshaun Watson really likes and you're able to, you know, move on and move forward. But my goodness, I mean, that bridge has been burned. I mean, they paid Deshaun Watson all year long to sit on the bench, not do anything, not participate in practice, nothing. I mean, it still blows my mind how this situation went down. But also, Deshaun Watson didn't give the Texans the ability to actually, you know, have any negotiating power here with his own, you know, legal issues that he's dealing with. So it's still so much is still in the air in terms of what is going to happen with Deshaun Watson. Where is he going to be next? And ultimately, what can the Houston Texans be able to get in return for him when, you know, his ability to play on the field is very much in question going into this next offseason as well?
Adam Jude of the Seattle Times says the Seahawks want to be more attack-minded on defense if there is one change to expect in 2022. We'll tell you what we think that means next.
You're listening to Jake and Stacey.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Jake Heaps and Stacey Rost.
All right, well, we knew that there was a report the other day on Monday evening about the Seahawks parting ways with Ken Norton Jr., that from the Seattle Times, and that happened. The Seahawks announced it yesterday. The two reporters behind that report, Adam Jude and Bob Condotta of the Seattle Times, have added a little more context to it. Bob Condotta was on with us yesterday afternoon. We talked to him, and he talked about some candidates that could be linked to Seattle and some of the little nuances from the reports that he had that maybe weren't immediately obvious on early coverage of it. It was a great interview. You can hear that on the Jake and Stacey podcast. It's in hour one of the show from yesterday. Then you have Adam Jude saying something pretty interesting, Jake. So Adam Jude yesterday afternoon tweets this: the coaching changes do represent, for Pete Carroll at least, a small pivot in his defensive philosophy, per sources. Carroll preferred cover two this season because his priority was to limit explosive plays, which it did. But he does plan to be more, quote, attack-minded going forward. To which I ask, what does that mean? Because there's a lot of interpretations you can have of it. Does it mean more blitzing? Does it mean changing your coverage? Does it mean going, you know, like a single high? Does it mean changing to cover three? I mean, what does it mean? What might this mean when you talk about being more attack-minded?
Well, attack-minded could mean a lot of different things, and but it did when I read it, it did make me raise my eyebrows in excitement, because this is what I have been wanting for this defense for quite some time, and especially when you make the trade for Jamal Adams, you have to be an attack-minded defense. That is the strength of Jamal Adams, is having this unique hybrid safety that has the ability, the unique ability that is what makes him such a special player in this league, where he is around the line of scrimmage, where he can generate sacks, where he can generate tackles for loss, and extremely athletic and brings tremendous speed and energy to your defense. That forces you to then, therefore, to get the most out of Jamal Adams, who has the ability to be one of the better defensive players in football. You have to be an attack-minded defense. And in my opinion, that version of it means being very aggressive from a blitz perspective, playing more man-to-man coverage. That to me is how I view being aggressive. Pete Carroll, on the other hand, he could view being more aggressive, being more in an attack mindset in terms of just overall pass coverage, right? For years, then what we have witnessed in the last 4 years in particular, Stacey, when you moved on from the Legion of Boom and you've tried to, you know, find answers at the cornerback spot, at the safety spot, you know, to Pete Carroll's credit, there has not been as much confidence in the guys in the secondary as there once was. So what do you try to do? You try to make sure that you don't get beat. You don't put your guys in positions where they can easily get beat and give up big plays down the field. So you're trying to play smart defensive football by playing more soft zone, allowing completions to happen in front of you rather than behind you. And ultimately, what I think was the result of that is them being too soft in their pass coverage and now wanting to look at it and see that you know, things are shifting, things are changing, moving in a more aggressive attack mindset. Maybe that means like what they were doing towards the end of the season, Stacey, which is playing a lot more man-to-man principles and playing a lot more match coverage. You'll hear that word. But basically, you know, not trying to confuse anybody, all match coverage really is that you have more of a tendency for your secondary players, your safeties, your linebackers, for example, to play more, play their zone more like man-to-man than, you know, true zone where guys are just backpedaling and their eyes are to the quarterback and they're not aware of anybody else around them, that they are finding and looking up individual receivers or tight ends and attaching themselves to them. That, to me, is what I could see, you know, Pete Carroll interpreting and saying, we are being more in attack mindset. We are being more aggressive with our secondary.
Is there any particular game this season, and it could be like the final stretch or whatever, or maybe there are moments from last season in the final stretch where you thought, okay, this looks like how they should be playing?
Yeah, I thought the Arizona Cardinals game was a great illustration of that. And the funny thing is that they had so many guys out. You know, Jamal Adams isn't playing. Quandre Diggs at some point isn't playing. You know, Bobby Wagner isn't out there on the field. I mean, you were down, you know, a significant number of starters, key starters, and yet you were able to play at a high level. And the reason for that being is that you played more man-to-man principles with your secondary and with your pass coverage, which allowed your defensive line to generate a better pass rush. Your guys up front were also winning up front, you know, putting pressure on Kyler Murray. And then when Kyler Murray has to make a decision under duress, guess what? He's not throwing into wide open spaces. He is having to thread the needle. He is having to, when he throws the football, not only having to find the open guy, but how am I going to throw this? Do I need to throw it down and low on his hip? Do I need to throw it out in front? Right? There is another question. There's another thing that you have to dissect and think about as a quarterback when the ball's leaving your hand, because the coverage is right there. And that to me was something that I really enjoyed seeing from this group. And they also put together a couple of blitz packages, Stacey, where Kyler Murray immediately knew that there was a free guy coming off the edge and he had to throw it to his hot route or his running back in the flat, and there was someone waiting right there for him. So that to me was a game that I looked at and I thought, man, this is the type of defense, this is the style that they need to play more. You add Jamal Adams to the mix, and you know, you've got a unique defensive presentation that will make it hard on offensive coordinators and quarterbacks to dissect what you're doing and really attack what you're doing.
Do you think there's which I wonder if this factored into some of those decisions, that idea of being less aggressive being directly correlated with the trust that you do or don't have in your players?
Oh, it's 100% correlated. To me, that's why I said over the last 4 years, they shifted in more to the soft zone philosophy, in my opinion, because of the lack of confidence in their personnel. And the problem is that, Stacey, when you add to that, when you have soft zone, then you add the fact that you're not generating a consistent and good pass rush, it's a bad combination. And that's what we witnessed from this defense in terms of just bleeding yards,
right?
Not having any real genuine impactful plays.
Because a quarterback has all the time in the world and also like 10 yards around every receiver.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, it's maddening to watch, and that has to change. And, you know, for Adam Jude of the Seattle Times to, you know, who with Bob Condotta, they broke the story that there was going to be a change and shift in defensive coordinators. When Adam Jude says, hey, the sources that have told us this also say that Pete Carroll is wanting to, you know, shift his mindset into more of attack minded defense. That gets me excited. That gets me genuinely excited. And there's no question that, you know, that shift in philosophy also has, you know, three names attached to guys that they have absolutely considered for the job without a doubt, which is Clint Hurt, Ed Donatell, mm-hmm. and now Sean Desai, who all three come from that Vic Fangio, you know, school of thought where they're not, you know, dialing up a ton of exotic pressures, but they are very aggressive in the secondary. They are very aggressive in their fronts and being able to get a lot of, you know, they're able to generate a lot of production out of their defensive lines. So I think that to me, is a style shift and also a mindset shift in terms of how to try to best maximize your personnel, which is ultimately the job of every single defensive coordinator.
Well, we are being attack-minded on the Seahawks defense covering this story this morning. Do you guys see it? Did you like it? The joke that I just made?
Incredible.
Thank you.
Very well done.
Because we're going to continue this conversation. Now, we're going to talk about some other stuff with the Seahawks coming up at the top of the hour. We've got four down territory. We've got all kinds of good stuff. But before we get to any of that, one of the number one things I see on the Mac and Jack's text line, for instance, when we talk about being more aggressive is, well, how do you use Jamal Adams? Get the most out of Jamal Adams. Use Jamal Adams differently. Well, funny you say that, because that's exactly what I want to talk about. We mentioned getting Jamal Adams more involved as part of being more attack-minded. But how do you best use Jamal Adams? That's next.
You're listening to Jake and Stacey.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Jake Heaps and Stacey Rost.
This hour of Jake and Stacey is brought to you by Advanced Hair Restoration. We mentioned Jamal Adams getting more involved as part of being more attack-minded. If you're just now joining us, by the way, that attack-minded quote about where the Seahawks defense could go is from Adam Jude of the Seattle Times, who is one of two reporters behind the initial report that the Seahawks would part ways with defensive coordinator Ken Norton Jr. and defensive passing game coordinator Andre Curtis. So presumably that comes from a source of one of Adam Jude's or Bob Condotta's about where the Seahawks defense can go from here, right? So what does being more attack-minded mean? We talked about it in our last segment, but let's focus specifically on one player, one of Seattle's most expensive players, the biggest trade under John Schneider and Pete Carroll, that being Jamal Adams. So how do you best use Jamal Adams, Jake?
Well, in my opinion, the best way to use him is to lean into his strengths, which is, you know, to keep him around the line of scrimmage, to use him as that hybrid player who they did a little bit of this. And I thought that Jamal Adams was getting a lot of undue criticism because in coverage, they used him more in terms of their buzz coverages. Cover one lurk coverages, meaning that he is coming down and being the robber in the middle of the field, very much like Cam Chancellor used to do. And I thought that he was doing a very good job in pass coverage and made a significant jump from his pass coverage from a year ago. But people were complaining about the lack of production, and rightly so, because you don't pay some, but you don't give up two firsts, and you don't give up the type of contract that you gave Jamal Adams, making him clearly the highest paid safety in the game, if you're not going to get the stats out of Jamal Adams that you're desperately seeking for, the thing that he does tremendously well, which is the sack totals, which is the tackles for loss. And that is something that Jamal Adams has obviously set the standard extremely high for himself. He had zero sacks. He had only four tackles for loss. He only had two quarterback hits. And to put it in context, he had 9.5 sacks a year ago. He had 11 TFLs. He had 14 quarterback hits. That's the type of player that he is. He is a disruptor. He is a big play guy, and maybe not in the form of interceptions, although he had two this past season.
Yeah, but that's not worth the trade-off. Like, getting picks is not worth giving up 9.5 sacks.
No, it's not just for that, Stacey, but it's what those 9.5 sacks get you. It's what those 14 quarterback hits get you. It's what those tackles for loss get you. Those negative big plays is ultimately why you trade for that.
Well, that's what I'm
saying. And if you're not able to generate that level of play out of Jamal Adams, then what the heck are we doing? What the heck is this? Was this all for? And so the number one thing that any defensive coordinator, whether it's Clint Hurd, whether it's Ed Donatell, Sean Desai, Gus Bradley, whoever else you're considering for possibly bringing in for your defensive coordinator, the number one thing, in my opinion, has to be, how are you going to utilize Jamal Adams? How are you going to get the best out of him? Because, Stacey, back in 2017, in that offseason, when this organization said, we're making Russell Wilson, Bobby Wagner our keystones of our team, Russell on offense, Bobby on defense, well, when you made this trade for Jamal Adams and you paid Jamal Adams, you are saying that Jamal Adams is now the new keystone of this Seahawks defense. And that, to me, is why that has to be the number one priority for the Seahawks defense.
Well, yeah, I mean, you're paying him $17.5 million. You gave up two first-round picks. One of those first-round picks, we know now, number 10 overall. Instead, you're going to have to watch the Jets make that pick, and fingers crossed that player ends up being a bust. That's a horrible thing to say. It's a horrible thing to say. I take it back already. I don't. But when you look at Jamal Adams and how to use him, one of the things we talked about last year during the season, Jake, was that if you were going to use him closer to the line of scrimmage, if you were going to use him as an in-the-box safety, and you were going to use him to try to get those tackles for loss and get those sacks, that maybe you disguise it just a little bit more. Is part of the problem that Jamal Adams was making the wrong reads, that Jamal Adams was trying to rush the passer when he maybe shouldn't have, or is part of the problem the way that the Seahawks were using him to rush the passer, that maybe they weren't always disguised in the best way?
But it's the latter. It's the fact that you didn't use him properly. It's the fact that, you know, when you did bring him down to rush the passer, you made it so incredibly obvious that every offensive coordinator, quarterback, and offensive line looked at it and said, "Oh, yep, here comes Jamal Adams. We're going to shift our line protections over towards him." And the Seahawks never had an answer to combat that. It blew my mind. And so they gave up really quickly because, rightfully so, they started turning protections to this dynamic, special weapon that you have, and yet you didn't capitalize that by, you know, blitzing, you know, having it look like Jamal Adams is coming, and then send Bobby Wagner, send Jordan Brooks, send Marquise Blair, send your nickel pressure.
Why didn't they?
I don't know.
Is it because they could? Okay? I'm genuinely like, Jake, give us the answers.
I don't know.
Why didn't they?
And it drove me crazy. And that, to me, is why I believe that when you're moving forward, you have to be able to have more sophisticated answers as to how you can make it more difficult on quarterbacks to ultimately figure out and diagnose what's coming. And you have to be able to protect Jamal Adams by showing different types of blitzes and showing different looks and really truly not having an understanding or an idea of knowing when Jamal Adams is coming.
So what's a look that you would show to try to disguise Jamal Adams? I know you're not a defensive coordinator, but
I wish I could show you on paper. And the Seahawks, they did this. They did this against the Detroit Lions. Do you remember the sack that Ryan Neal got? If you could go back, the sack against the Detroit Lions that was arguably a fumble and they ruled it wasn't.
And it was almost recovered by John Reed, right?
Yes. So what they did on that play, it's the same thing. Ryan Neal is playing the same exact position as Jamal Adams. Now, what they did, though, is that they had Jordan Brooks and Cody Barton lined up over the center on either side. on both sides in those gaps, and then they also had Ugo Amadi on the other side down towards the line of scrimmage. So you had four guys. So you had strong safety, you had nickel, you had both of your middle linebackers up towards and crowding the line of scrimmage. Now, as the quarterback in the offensive line, you're having a hard time determining who's going to come. And you're setting your protections. And what everybody was doing during the season to begin was saying, well, we know that Jamal Adams is coming. We're gonna shift our protections over towards Jamal Adams.
Right.
Well, then you need to bring Ugo Amadi off the edge on the other side. You need to make them wrong. And you need to do that consistently enough to where they don't know where it's coming from. And that will help open up opportunities and free up Jamal Adams because you can't just automatically set your protections over to Jamal Adams. So that is one way that you can help, you know, make him a more effective player while using him in the way that he is best utilized. So that is the unique trade-off that you have to be able to do. But Stacey, guess what? When you do that as well, when you do that as well, it means that you have to be very confident in the guys in your secondary to be able to play man-to-man coverage, to play a more aggressive style. And I don't think that they were comfortable doing that and putting their personnel, Stacey, to go to your point, in position in unadvantageous situations. So you have this defense pulling in two directions and trying to find the best way to, you know, put forth the best product. And unfortunately for them, their determination was, we're going to blitz Jamal Adams less and we're going to play more coverage because we don't have confidence that our guys can play that man-to-man on a consistent basis.
All right, guys, in 1 hour, we're going to talk to Mariners insider Shannon Dreher about those new Baseball America rankings, plenty to be excited about, especially with Julio Rodriguez now number 2 in MLB's pipeline. Very exciting stuff. Before we get to that, though, friend of the show, Daniel Jeremiah /DJ, fan of Christmas music in the summer, and also so much better than enemy of the show, Troy Aikman. Need I remind you, Curtis, mental note, we're still trying to get Troy Aikman on for that big beef.
Oh, absolutely.
With Jake. Okay, good. Daniel Jeremiah says, fun trade discussion. Eagles get Russell Wilson. Seahawks get Eagles 3 first-round picks this year and next year's second-round pick. Which team says no? Do you say no? Would you say no? That's coming up next.